Hey everybody, welcome back to Quest for Peace. I'm Maya Zaktar, and I haven't done this show in a while, and today I am very, very happy to have my best friend in the world on today, Robert Borghese, or Borghese, or however you want to say it, because I always screw it up. He is on, and he's seen his lower third, known me for 17 years. So first thing I got to do is apologize for knowing 17 years. So if anybody knows me pretty well, it's him. And Rob, if people don't know you at all, how would you explain yourself to human beings?
Explain myself to human beings.
Mm-hmm.
I am, in my real life, a dentist, and I do that for a job. I don't consider that my life. I have a ton of hobbies, which kind of define me. I work on cars. I like to build my own furniture. I spend a lot of time by myself, but obviously, since I've known you for 17 years, I like hanging out with other people sometimes.
Now, as long as we've known each other, I know that you have been super chill, super calm, and I have no freaking idea why you are so calm. I mean, you've known me. I've calmed down a bit, which I know people find strange because I'm nowhere near as a hothead as I used to be.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You've calmed down a ton since college.
Yeah, so I mean, Rob's known me since I was about 18, so that is scary. How are you? How were you so calm in back even in college? I mean, that's basically where people are stupid and young and basically raging hormones. But you were like the chillest guy I knew, still are. How did that even work?
Truthfully, I think it's how I grew up. I grew up in a big family. I had four siblings, two parents, and there were always friends over the house. And you know, rather than try and, you know, get a ton of attention, I kind of kept to myself because I never really got any attention. And so I found that made me able to kind of amuse myself and kind of stay in my head. So that's how I stay calm, is I have an inner dialogue that, you know, if people are doing weird things and pissing me off outside there, it's all in my head, but I don't let it out. I don't let it be seen, you know, visually to everybody else.
Yeah, but how do you stop that connection? Because the voice in my head is usually yelling. All right, it sounds like George Costanza sometimes, just freaking out all the time. But how do you disconnect from here to here? Because sometimes I'm like, this has got to come out. I got to say it, but you do it.
I think it's a personality thing. I think it's, you know, people always throw around the word introvert, extrovert. You know, some people have to say everything they're thinking, and some people never say what they're thinking. I think it has a lot to do with that, and kind of, you know, what business you're in, how you force yourself to be. I think anybody can force themselves to be, you know, an introvert and extrovert in certain situations, but everybody has a base that they like to go down to. Me, I'm obviously an introvert. I like my alone time, which is what keeps me calm. And when I'm in a group of tons of people, unless it's, you know, all people I know, sometimes I force myself to be an extrovert. But usually I kind of sit back and contribute when the conversation comes to me. But, you know, in your case, I mean, considering the careers you've chosen and being online personality and everything, you had to be an extrovert. So anything that you're thinking needed to come out. And so that's really been ingrained in you. And it's one of the things I like about you.
Aw, that's really nice. Usually the guests don't say that. They don't say that they like me. They're on the show.
In order to be your friend for 16 years, I had to like you a little bit.
Yeah, I like you too. I've had the worst time when it comes to actually not saying what I'm thinking, because a lot of it, you're right. My old gig, I was basically on air most of the time. So when I'm sitting there, you can't have dead air. So you just keep yammering anyway. So basically anything I was thinking would come out. But when it's the raging, screaming voice in my head, I literally nowadays, I bite my tongue. I'm like, hey, that saying must mean something. So I try it. And for the most part, it works. But you get to do something that I can't. You have alone time. Now, I moved to Manhattan, you know this, June. And I live in 500 square feet. I've got two dogs that are over there. I've got a girlfriend who lives here. So that's four living things in 500 square feet. It's fucking tense. Okay? It can get really tense because you can't get away. And And otherwise, and if you just go into the bedroom, that's just odd because it's like not like there's space in there. And yeah, I'm swearing on the show. Sorry about that, kids. I will try to refrain from here on in because that was a pretty big one. But yeah, it gets tense. But how did you find your – I mean, you were in a big family. How did you get alone time back then?
Well, the thing is I've perfected the ability – I can be around other people and still feel like I'm alone. And people sometimes think this is rude, but you've seen it before. I can sit there doing my own thing with somebody else in the room, and it's almost like that other person isn't even there. You know, I don't speak or anything for, you know, and then if perhaps I have a question or something, or I want to start talking, I do, but I can be around other people and still feel like it's alone time. I guess it's, you know, I kind of block everything else out if I can. Obviously, you know, girlfriends tend to be harder to block out. And in the past, when I have lived with somebody, they kind of learn to live with the fact that sometimes I would just kind of zone out for a while from them. And if they didn't, it obviously didn't work out.
I tried your method. I have tried your method of just silently like doing something on my own, whether it's on an iDevice or just sitting on it with a laptop or just looking at a Kindle these days. But it's actually happened to, it's gotten to the point where my son, he goes, "Dad, why are you not talking? Dad, why are you not talking? Dad, why are you not talking?" Because he thinks something's gone wrong. And he's usually right. If I'm talking to him and I stop talking and I'm upset for some reason because he's like, you know, like kicked something or destroyed something, I will be calm, but I'll be quiet. And it's gotten to the point where if I'm not speaking, it's like a universal sign that something has gone wrong. So it does. I can't use your method. So you suck. I can't apply your method because nobody believes me.
I see. So because you are the way that you are, people expect you to be talking all the time. So now that when you try and change things up and be silent and be still, people think you're either pissed off or depressed or something.
Yeah, it's really weird because like to make a shift, for people to see me be quiet, at least in a social setting. Man, at work I'm pretty quiet. If I go into the office, I'm not exactly like – actually, I pretty much don't ever really shut up. But when I'm quiet, it's unusual. So yeah. I'm trying to – I'm like maybe that's the secret. You know, if you just don't say everything you think, it doesn't really mean anything because you're not insulting anybody. But in my case, because I have this stupid face – I can have like a disgusted look on my face because of any reason, and it can be misread by pretty much any human being. I'm not saying this. It's not just like Liz. Like my mom would do this, where she's like, "Get that look off your face." I'm like, "I wasn't saying anything. It's just a look on my face." But you've managed to not deal with. I mean, you've seen me from every which range of emotion. And how did you deal with that? Because I mean, I was like crazy. I mean, I'm pretty crazy now.
Well, early on, I had to learn your moods. Obviously, when we first lived together, I didn't understand how easy it was to make you blow up and get in a bad mood. But once I figured it out, you know, I knew that all you needed was time. Let you run its course, let you flip out, do your thing, and then eventually you'd come back down to earth. You know, I wasn't your, you know, girlfriend, so I didn't have the job of trying to calm you down. All I did was I shut up when you got pissed off. You know, sometimes it was actually amusing, depending what was pissing you off, you know, whether it was, you know, some Australian guy being cast as Wolverine or, you know, the Godzilla script that got released early and you were like, this is terrible. But, you know.
Yeah. So for those of you who don't know me very well, if you think I'm hotheaded now, Rob has seen it way worse. And yeah, I was yelling. I remember we were in our dorm rooms. I came out and I was yelling like about, "He's pregnant. He's pregnant. They're making Godzilla pregnant. What is this?" And I was swearing up and down. And so that actually happened. And then I also found out that there was this Australian fellow who was a singer dancer fellow who became the candidate or became Wolverine. I'm like, this is not going to work. He sings and dances. You can't have a singing, dancing Wolverine. I was very wrong. So this is also why when they cast Heath Ledger as Joker, I was like, you know what? I'm going to give it a chance. I think that sometimes maybe I'm wrong much later. But yeah, the time thing, I wish that worked nowadays. Like the timing thing, I need a lot of time to go through something. I just realized this week. Like I like being irritated at times. On this quest for peace thing, like I've been trying to get like calm for the past like 6 years. I just turned 35 on October 5th, and I'm like, okay, midlife crisis time. And as Rob put it, you're halfway to 70. So I was like, thanks, jerk, because I didn't think of it that way. I'm halfway to 70, and I realized something. I'm like, look, I've been trying to be something awesome for 6 years. I'm not really there, but I realized, like, I like having the moods, and, like, yeah, I can be up and down, but there's nothing really wrong with that, especially if like, the way you're explaining it. You've known me, so – just because I blow up doesn't mean like I'm going to destroy the world. It just means that like okay, I'm just a little upset and I can get past it. Just let me have a little spike of stupidity and then we can move on. Otherwise, if you analyze it to death, yeah. How did you not analyze me to death and go, dude, this guy is crazy. He keeps flipping moods left and right. And I was never diagnosed as bipolar, by the way, which is weird because I have talked to therapists and they're like, no, you don't have you're not bipolar and you don't really have – you got some extreme emotions, but you don't really seem to exhibit any of the things, which I thought was pretty surprising. How did you withstand that? And how did you not think, hey, this guy is nuts?
I kind of liked it. It was kind of refreshing because you said what was on your mind and I knew exactly what kind of mood you were in. You know, some people, you never quite know what's going on with you. It was always cut and dry. He's angry. He's happy. He's sad. He's bored, whatever. I mean, it was just, I don't know. Like I said, it was refreshing. And that's how I got used to it. You know, I just knew that, you know, whatever you were feeling, I was going to know that that's what was going on. And that's easier to deal with for me.
Well, and you're you seem pretty calm, like I've said again. And you do a lot of hobbies. And that seems to fill your time. Do you find that like, do you find that kind of like clear your mind when you do that? And if you're in a bad mood, what do you do? Is there a hobby you go to first?
Well, lately it's been, working on my car. I have a Jaguar, which means it constantly is broken down and needs something done to it. I find that very calming, you know, because working on vehicles, there's an aspect of finesse, but then there's also an aspect of aggression when, you know, you're trying to get a bolt out that's stuck and you're hammering on it or something. And then there's also the problem solving aspect of when a bolt is stuck, how the hell am I going to get this thing out? You know, it's actually what I've been doing this weekend. I've been changing out the rear shocks on the car and one of the bolt was stuck and it took me half a day to get it out. But man, such a good feeling when that thing finally came free. The other thing I do lately is exercise. I mean, if I'm really angry or stressed, you know, I go, you know, do a P90X or a, you know, insanity workout and or run on the treadmill or run outside if the weather's nice. And I've always done that. And I found that's how I really, you know, calm down is just, you know, sweat it out pretty much.
I try the exercise method. Today, I think it's day 9 of insanity for me straight. So I'm going to be doing that tonight. I had to put that as a priority. There are like a couple of things that make me sane. It's like sleep, exercise, and like good food, really actually like good fuel. And I've come to terms with this idea where if people ask me, hey, do you want to do something after work? I'm like, no, I can't. Because in my head, I'm at 7 o'clock. I got to work out here. And I live on the fourth floor. So I asked my neighbor downstairs if there's an okay time for this. She's like, 7 o'clock's great for me, 7 p.m. So I know I basically have an hour window at 8 o'clock in the morning, which I'm never here. Or I can do it at 7 o'clock at night. So I have this one, like these windows that I can use only for this thing. Since, as you know, Sandy's jumping around a lot, so I don't want to be that neighbor who's like thumping on the ground, especially when the workout's over, where I just collapse, which is what I do. So like I've made it a priority, and it's definitely been very helpful in a pursuit of calmness in general, because like you can just let it out there. In a shitty mood, you just flat out go. I remember P90X when I would do that. Angry, I do P90X angry. I would just pass all of the breaks. I'd be done in like 35 minutes because I was just like killing it. But it's very difficult. Like this, it's so odd to find how much has to change because you're in a small space in an apartment on the fourth floor. Like you're working on cars. Like I don't know what I could work on here. I don't have a car anymore. I occasionally mess with the home theater behind me, but I don't like messing with it because it's all wired like really pretty and everything. I don't want to mess with it. You got any ideas on how to stay calm? If you were crammed in a small space, what would you be doing?
When I was crammed in a small space, I found myself turning more to, I guess, building computers, playing video games, but video games that made me think more, you know, kind of work through type games, not just like, you know, blind shoot 'em up kind of things. You know, kind of keep my mind busy. And as far as the exercise, when I was in a small space, I switched from the jumping because of the problem with the neighbors to more of something weightlifting. And then I would run outside, which would be my thing. You know, that's how I'd get my cardio and then I'd just get my, my weights done for, you know, bulk. Not that I'm that bulky, but you know what I mean?
Yeah. Rob can like easily weigh like 100 pounds if you don't feed him. He just drops weight like you wouldn't believe. Fastest metabolism I've ever seen. Just ridiculous. You still got a fast metabolism at 35 now?
Yes. I have to, I still have to, you know, I have to, if I exercise, I have to make sure I eat enough or I lose weight at a very fast pace.
And people will hate you now. So you're calm.
Yes. Sorry about that.
You're fixing cars. You're running in Florida. It's all nice and humid over there. So
it's not actually it was 42 degrees this morning in Florida when I woke up.
That's pretty chilly, actually.
Yeah. People flipping out. They're like wearing like winter clothes here.
I saw a lady today. I was walking around with the dogs this morning. Take them to the vet. And the lady was wearing like a big winter coat. It's like it was probably in the 40s, and she had like the big furry hood, right? But oddly, she was eating ice cream. With a cup and a spoon. And I was like, I literally, as we were walking by, I pointed at her because I was just so weirded out. But like, what? Like, you know, that makes no sense. Why are you, why? I guess it won't melt, so it's good. I just couldn't get my head around that. Well, how do you stay motivated, by the way? So you do work out a lot. And I know that you do. Because
I found that I have a lot of work stress at work. So I find out when I wake up in the morning, I like to do my cardio, usually go for a run, and then go to work. And then when I come home, I try and get in. Lately, it's been, you know, Body Beast workout or, you know, mixed in with some insanity for cardio in the afternoon. I find if I have to miss one, I'll miss the morning workout, go to work. But when I come home, I need to work out just to decompress from, you know, the stresses of the day. And that's really been helpful since I started doing that. I find I sleep better. I find I deal with work better. And it kind of just, you know, it's a good switch between work and home. Work, you know, come home, work out, and then I'm ready to relax the rest of the night and go to bed. So that's been really helpful for me.
Yeah, but what gets you – the fact that you can get better sleep and everything, but how do you just – make yourself do it every day, other than the fact that you know how it makes you feel? Because I know with workouts, like, I know during it, if I'm flailing around and I see myself sometimes in a mirror, I'm just like, man, I do not look like the guys in the video right now, and I do not want to see me bouncing around with all the flab everywhere. But how do you stay motivated that you are actually doing it every day? Because it's these workouts are pretty killer. This isn't like a promo for this stuff. We do both like the Beachbody stuff, but how do you just keep doing it day by day? Because I could see something like after work at times, I'm like, I just want to come home. I want to sit on a couch and just like turn my brain off. I know workouts are good for that, but sitting on the couch, that's very attractive compared to busting your ass and sweating everywhere.
Yeah. My thing is I cannot allow myself to sit on the couch when I come home. Literally, I walk through the door. I take off my scrubs and I put on my workout clothes and I immediately work out. I find the days that I don't do that, I won't work out. If I sit down and turn the TV, I'm done for the night. I know it's kind of a motivation thing that if I take my scrubs off, my work clothes off, put on the workout clothes and just go and do it, I get it done that way. It's not really how I motivate, but it's how I, you know, keep myself doing it. If I don't do that, then I do sit on my ass and, you know, watch TV and, you know, eat something that I shouldn't, you know, things like that. So it's really just, you know, kind of routine, you know, follow the routine kind of thing. So it's not really motivation. It's just a routine.
That sounds like a good idea. Just routine, routine, routine. Like that's what I'm trying to build now. The 9-day streak is pretty good. I think today's day 9. So this is going to be, no, today's day 10. So it's going to be pretty hard. I'm not looking forward to it. But I know it's at 7 o'clock. So, like, I have an appointment effectively with it. It's in the calendar. I know what I have to do. Hopefully that'll turn out okay. Because, like I mentioned before, I hadn't drank for, like, the past week. Right? When I was working out, I'm like, screw it. I'm not ruining this, okay? I'm not going to add in a bunch of calories with beer because I love beer. Of all the alcohol to take, that's, like, the worst because it's, like, it has the most amount of calories, especially a double triple IPA. Tons of calories there. And then also it leads to really poor food decisions at some point. If I have two or three, bang. I'm like, I'm going to eat a pizza. It's like – really bad ideas. So the past week or so, I just didn't have anything until the beer fest yesterday. And man, that was fun. I do find, like, so the thing about being happy, trying to find peace and mental calmness, man, alcohol is such a freaking, it's such a, not a liar, what would you call this thing? It's almost like, not an evil. It seems like it could be great for that. You're going to calm down, but it screws with your head so much. That I'm like, I don't know if I should like drink regularly anymore. Like, I don't, Like, I like the idea of waiting a week. I'm thinking, what's for the next day? Basically today, because there's football is going to be on today. I'm like, I cannot drink during football because I will not work out tonight if that happens.
Right.
You like to drink too. I know we've drank together a lot. How do you keep that in check?
I pretty much confined it to the weekends now. And then it's kind of, like you said, it's kind of, I look forward to it. You know, it used to be, you know, come home, have a beer every night. Now it's, you know, I try and not to drink alone. So I try and, you know, save it for the weekend when I'm meeting up with other people or, you know, watching a football game or, you know, in Florida, college football is big. So it's usually Saturday night kind of thing. But yeah, it's kind of something I now have pushed to, you know, once or twice a week so I can have something to look forward to. And also it's healthier, you know, we're halfway to 70.
Yeah, that is definitely, I was looking at that. I'm going to stay healthier if I don't keep doing this, because also the quality of sleep declines if you drink too much. Your mm-hmm. skin looks like crap. There's a whole lot of stuff that happens with drinking, and I've looked at the evils of it. And I'm like, okay, I see that. But beer's really good. That's the problem. But this is what I hate about beer and alcohol in general, is that it's really easily available versus, like, if somebody sold a six-pack of Filet Mignons and they sold it for $10, I probably would be really, really fat all the time. Like, it's just – it's just really convenient, right? And it's really easy. And like the thing is, I was analyzing this, and there was a time where, like, I just, when I hit 30, I was freaking out. We talked about this a long time ago, Rob and I. Rob was over, and we were like, what am I going to do? What am I going to substitute with, if I want to get rid of alcohol, what do I do instead? We started drinking tea. Remember that?
Yep. It worked for about a week.
Tea was an interesting substitute, because the idea was, what do I like about it? And we were talking about rituals. A lot of people go to coffee, but drinking mm-hmm. coffee at night is a really stupid idea, because like, you're not going to sleep well anyway. So I was trying to figure that out. And then we came up with the idea that what I really get out of alcohol was turning my brain off, because it just doesn't stop. That was one of the reasons why I was basically so freaking unhappy all the time. So my brain will create a problem that doesn't exist, and then it will analyze the hell out of it. So it creates this cycle of a problem. And so we started coming up with ridiculous things to do. And that's how I got into indoor climbing, which mm-hmm. I really want to get back to. I found a place that's nearby. And it's a crazy substitute. But like the idea of relaxing. I finally found something. I looked it up online. I was curious what you think about it. That the thing that could replace drinking at night could be listening to music in your own collection, because you can just sit there, kind of. It's the same kind of ritual, right? You're just sitting there and you're just taking something in. Like, I think that mm-hmm. might be a really crazy but suitable substitute for just kind of vegging out. What do you think?
Absolutely. I definitely could see, you know, listening to music, especially you, because you're, you know, really into your music and you like very varied kinds of music, and you also, you know, play music, which might be another thing that helps you kind of turn your brain off and focus on something. You know, if you were, you know, playing the guitar or, you know, practicing is always something, you know, I've enjoyed. You know, I play the drums, so I find that when I'm playing the drums, if I put on some music and play along, my mind just kind of shuts off, which is really helpful when I need it to do that. Another thing I do similar to listening to music is I listen to books on tape. And I didn't realize until I got into it how much I enjoyed people reading to me. Maybe it's, you know, a throwback from when you're a little kid and your mom's reading to you before bed. But I find it, you know, I focus on the words and I really do just kind of space out and listen to the story, which is kind of cool.
Do you listen to fiction or nonfiction?
I do both. The most recently it was nonfiction. It's a story about the Carroll Shelby and Ford and their battle against Ferrari for the Le Mans in the 60s, which was really interesting, just seeing the tit for tat and everything and hearing, you know, the history between, you know, Enzo Ferrari and Carroll Shelby, who were two of the most colorful people, you know, in motorsports. And then before that, it was like a fantasy novel that, you know, was in a series that I like to read. So it really doesn't matter what it is. It's just, you know, something to read, you know, and sometimes it's like in the nonfiction, sometimes I'll read something political or comedy or something like that, and that's always funny too.
That's an interesting idea. I've been listening to a lot of tech stuff lately. A friend of mine, Jonathan Strickland, he mm-hmm. does that show, and it's there. I don't have a long commute anymore. I used to have like this crazy long commute to San Francisco from Petaluma. It was about an hour and a half. Mm-hmm. So I used to watch lots of TV and listen to a lot of different shows. But my commute's now about 30 minutes, so which is great. I mean, I love the fact that I don't have a huge commute, but I need something smaller. Because I don't know if I could listen to a book in 30-minute increments, because I think it would just be really staggered, and it would probably – it'd take me like what, like a couple of weeks to get a thing done.
Yeah, it takes –
Yeah, so that's what I've been listening to a lot of, just learning like ridiculous things of like how a refrigerator works and how does a washing machine work, or like the history of the Xbox. Like these little – they're all interesting stuff. This is not like – and Strickland is not paying me to say this either. So like I enjoy the program, and I've been using that to kind of tune out a bit. But
yeah,
do you find the news stressful at all? Because I at some point – like I used to get a free paper every time I went to the subway. There was like AM New York. I would take a look at it to see what was going on in the world. But then I read this story about somebody saying that this weird fascination that humans have with ingesting news, especially with like today's culture, that it's actually very detrimental. And there's very little that you actually get out of it. Do you stay up on the news? Does that stuff stress you out? Or do you just kind of space out when it comes to that?
I don't look a lot at the news. I mean, unfortunately, you know, I follow sports, so I'll read that because it's kind of mindless and I find it doesn't upset me. When I do, you know, sit down and go to a website and read the newspaper, you know, it usually kind of pisses me off, you know, about the world and, you know, things I can't control. So it's not worth me being upset for things I can't control. You know, I need to keep up a little bit on it because as a dentist, my patients sometimes ask me about it, but I wouldn't say, you know, I wake up and look at the news and, you know, all the time. Because like I said, it does sometimes upset me, you know, with things I can't control.
Yeah, that's something I've kind of pulled off of. I used to be like a bit of a news junkie when it came to tech news, or if it was about sports news or just world news, I'd be paying attention to, because I like to have an idea of what's going on in the world. But a lot of it is really freaking upsetting. It does stress me out at times. And that was something that like I've actively chosen to not like pick up the paper. So I'll just listen to a show instead. Listen to music mm-hmm. on the train. It's also physically easier than holding a newspaper, I will say that. But this idea of kind of choosing what to spend your time on, because it used to be like I kind of was passive when it came to what I was doing. Like, okay, I'm coming home. What's going to happen now? And I don't really like mm-hmm. to plan. I really hate planning stuff out. I can follow a plan, but I don't want to make plans. Like every time it's like I had to just book a flight for Las Vegas for CES, and I hate that stuff. So I'm trying to really focus on when I'm spending any single second, it better be something that I'm getting some kind of joy out of. I've been trying to follow the model of the dogs. I've read about animals, and I have two dogs. So I read something called The Dog's Mind, or A Dog's mm-hmm. Mind. And this thing just tells you that basically all they think is this fun? We should be doing fun. Let's be fun. It's like, could you imagine simply thinking that? And if something bad happens, like, okay, that's over. This is fun now, right? Like, there's no grudges with dogs unless you really traumatize them. It's really hard for them to like stay angry about something. So this is a crazy but dumb idea that I've been trying. But you see, you don't have – I wish I could just emulate your way of I am calm. Because you know I grew up in a house where folks were yelling. Lots of yelling in my house. And your family was very large, but you didn't have a lot of yelling. You had to like calm people around. What advice do you have for people that are trying to figure out how to be happy?
How to be happy or how to be calm? I mean, they're mutually exclusive. You don't necessarily have to be calm to be happy. I mean, I feel like you could be happy the way you are. And I don't think you'd be happy if you were calm all the time. I think you need to be irritated and a little angry at times. You need to let that out. That's your way. And that's, you know, how you stay sane, which then equals happiness. Like I said, everybody's different is the big thing. I don't have a girlfriend right now. I live alone. And like I said, I like my alone time. And I know that's what I need. But a lot of people need to be around other people at all times to be happy. And that's fine, too. The biggest thing is everybody needs to find what makes them happy. Usually that's lowering your stress and increasing your enjoyment in life. Now, if you have to work less or change jobs to do that, that's one thing to lower stress. Increasing enjoyment, make sure when you're out of work, you're doing what you want to be doing, not what you feel like you have to be doing, I think is the big thing. A lot of people do things because they think it's what they need to do, and they keep doing them beyond the point that they're not happy doing them. And I know it's easy to say, you know, find a new job or, you know, find a new hobby, but really the biggest thing is self-assessment. What is bothering you? Why aren't you happy? And then trying to fix it, which is the hard part. But the biggest thing is you need to find what it is that's not making you happy and try and replace it with things that make you happy. And it seems simple, but it's really not. It's really difficult. And it's taken me, you know, 35 years to kind of figure it out, and I'm still learning.
Yeah. See, that's weird that you, the first thing you said kind of threw me for a loop, that you don't have to be calm to be happy. That's something I'm kind of coming up with. And as you're saying it, like, I'm just, my mind's like trying to adjust to that, because my idea was, okay, here's the deal. I'm annoyed. I get annoyed at everything, right? Like, I get bumped on the subway, someone just say, excuse me, or like if there's somebody didn't pick up after their dog or whatever. Let's just pretty much, if it exists, it can annoy me. So my concept was, what if I wasn't always burning? What if I wasn't always annoyed? So I tried to get into this whole inner calmness thing. If I could figure this out, nothing would annoy me. So if I had nothing annoyed me, then I couldn't get angry. This is my theory, all right? Kind of thinking into, looking into this whole Buddhism stuff, looking into meditation, trying to be more mindful in general, kind of enjoy like the little things. I enjoy things a little bit more than I used to. But to be calm, and when I finally I cracked what it was like last week or so, and I was like, wait, I think being upset is sort of something I need to do from time to time. I don't know how monks do it. I don't know how the Dalai Lama is always laughing. I don't really get it. But maybe that's right. But why do you think it's exclusive? Why do you think that you don't have to be calm to be happy? Like, are there people that are like just – I don't know if this is going to work for me, by the way. I just thought about this like last week where I'm like, yeah, wait a minute. I can just be annoyed and let that go and I'll be fine. But how do you have that in your head that they can be separate?
Well, I think, like I keep saying today, everybody's different. I see a lot of this in my family. I mean, we are this tons of different personalities, and we all get together and we get along really well. But everybody has different things. And that's why I've learned a lot about people, is from my family. So, you know, some of us, I'm not going to say which siblings, get angry much easier than others. And they get over it, and that's what they need to do. That's their process. You know, everybody has a process that, you know, they need to get through the day pretty much. And being calm happens to be mine. I do not like getting upset. It bothers me. It makes my heart race. And I feel terrible afterwards when I have gotten upset and probably, you know, said something to somebody that I didn't want to say. But, you know, I like to please people. That's another issue I have. But, you know, that's just one of those things. I don't like getting upset. But other people need to get upset to get over something. And if they don't, it just kind of builds on itself and builds on itself. And then they explode. And it's worse than it ever would have been if they just didn't let it out in the first place. So that's what I mean. You know, being calm and forcing yourself to be calm is only if it's what you want to do. If you force yourself to be calm and you're not letting out something and you're letting it build and fester, you're not doing anyone favors, and you're going to make yourself less happy in the long run. So that's what I mean. You don't have to be calm. You just have to be able to deal with whatever's going on and help yourself get past it. So whatever your method is for doing that, that's what you need to follow.
That is, it sounds about right. I try to, again, I always go back to dogs. Like, I probably get snarly and angry. Like, it seems like the world's going to end. If you're on me and something's, and you see me upset, I mean really upset. I don't mean just annoyed. If you see me upset, I am kind of – you don't want to be near me when I'm upset. Normally people don't do that. But if you are – if you know me very well, you go, okay, well, he's upset. But this lasts all of like 20 seconds. Like, I'm going to get really pissed for 20 seconds. But what happens now though is how you react. So when people respond to me angrily when I'm angry, that's just going to set me off even further. That was something I found out, like – if I'm upset and then people are upset at me for being upset, that will drive me insane. It's like, this is something I figured out. I'm like, when I'm met with anger, I get angrier. Look, you're a dentist. There are jokes about dentists. I was a lawyer. There are jokes about lawyers. How do you handle dings? And like, I'm sure you've dealt with different, difficult patients. How do you handle mm-hmm. that kind of stuff when basically you're not in control? These people are in your face and they're basically forcing you to deal with it. How do you handle that stuff?
Truthfully, and this is interesting, we just had a seminar this week on our, you know, work personality kind of thing. And I found that I'm actually a different person at work than I am in my personal life. I'm more of an extrovert at work. I'm more of a problem solver. You know, someone comes to me upset and, you know, I find a way to make them happy by, you know, figuring out what the cause of their anger or, you know, disappointment with me as, you know, a dentist is. So I find, you know, I guess what happens is as a different person, you know, as a different personality in my work life, I'm able to deal with things better. And I believe I adopted that personality to deal with, you know, that the particular challenges of the job, you know, which is, you know, a lot of times dealing with people who are unhappy or, you know, in pain or things like that. And a lot of times, you know, I try and put myself in the patient's shoes. I understand when someone's in pain, you know, they're going to act much differently than they normally would. So I kind of give them a little bit more leeway because I understand, you know, they're speaking from, you know, a place of pain and anger, not from, you know, a rational thought process. So, you know, the biggest thing is, you know, just kind of rolling with the punches, so to speak, in that environment where I might not do the same thing at home, if you know what I mean.
Okay, but how, but what, okay, so what do you mean your personality is different? What exactly do you do at work that's not you?
Like I said, we're in a, let's give a hypothetical situation at home. You know, if someone, you know, came at me and, you know, really started to try and start a fight, I might, you know, be more quiet and, you know, try and placate them and calm them down. You know, at work, if someone came at me and started a fight, I would also be trying to calm them down, but I would also be standing up for myself and what I was doing and things like that, rather than being a little bit more introverted and meek and, you know, just kind of taking it. Because if I did that, they would lose respect for me, you know, as their healthcare provider, if you know what I mean. So I almost have to force myself to be a little different and be a little bit more aggressive and angry at times. You know, I have, you know, raised my voice and things like that to calm people down, especially if, you know, I thought it was, you know, getting out of hand and, you know, they were insulting an assistant of mine or something like that. But, you know, I find that, I guess I'm just much, a little bit more type A personality when I'm at work, because that's what the job needs.
Wow. Okay. Switching back between type A and type B, because you're pretty much a type B as far as
I've
known you.
I know. That's like, why such I found a chill dude. This personality, you know, profile, you know, this work thing that they did, I found it interesting that in a work environment, there was various questions about, you know, you as a person and you and your work environment. And almost everybody, you know, in my office who took the test, they were a little bit different or a lot different at work than they were at home, because, you know, it's kind of, you know, whatever you have to do to survive and, you know, excel at your job sometimes takes, you know, being a little different.
I mean, I think I'm a type A everywhere, pretty much, when it comes to things. I mean, at work, I'm a little bit more diplomatic than I am. So I'm like, I'm the opposite. I guess I'm kind of, I'm nicer at work. And I don't, I think what I've found, what my biggest issue has been, and I think you know this pretty well, is that my expectations of the people closest to me are much higher than of other people. Like, I always think they should be like way up here. And this was something that when I was looking into the whole Buddhist stuff, part of suffering is expectation. So my expectations are so freaking high that I can only be disappointed. That's a horrible thing. That's also one of the reasons why I was thinking, okay, inner calmness, and I can, if I can somehow get these ideas out of my head, you know, not think like, okay, well, this person didn't do this thing for me, and now it's way worse. You ever run into this kind of problem? I mean, how do you set expectations for others?
I actually have a similar problem. I do expect more from the people I know better and care about. I have very high expectations for them, and I'm very often, you know, let down, or I get very upset. Whereas, you know, if it was someone I didn't know so well, I might let it slide. The biggest thing is kind of catching myself before I get really upset. And this is also, once again, the introvert in my head thing. I can catch it before I lash out at somebody for, you know, them perhaps not living up to this ideal I have in my head. The only problem is, you know, sometimes this allows people to kind of walk all over me a little bit because I don't always come at them about whatever they're doing that's wrong. So I, as myself, when I try and study myself and think about what I could do better, I could, you know, stand up for what I want somebody to be a little bit more. Whereas in your case, I'm guessing it's more you fly off the handle and then maybe want to pull back a little bit when you realize, okay, maybe I, you know, had my expectations a little too high. Truthfully, I think, you know, you got to be somewhere in the middle. It's okay to have higher expectations for those that are closer to you, but you also have to be realistic about, you know, just what those expectations are and can that person actually fulfill them, you know, to that high standard you're putting them in.
You know, sometimes I think about this idea that the people that are closest to me, they basically have to deal with the worst version of me, but the people that aren't close to me get to deal with a very nice version of me. And I wondered about this for a while. I'm like, what if I just flipped it entirely? Like, if I just saved every, like, nice thing I say, if I just saved the amount of patience I had for the people I love the most, if I just did that, I'd be basically an asshole to everybody else. Could that actually work? Because, like, the thing about it is, there's a lot of willpower, and I was reading about willpower a while ago. Like, there's basically, it's not like it's infinite. In the course of a day, like, you're more likely to make bad decisions at the end of the day than you would be at the beginning of the day, because you're basically taking dings. In my case, like, if I'm trying to eat right, trying to make sure that I exercise, if you're trying to do all these things that require willpower, by the end of the day, you're exhausted, and you're much more likely to cause, not have a fight, but you're going to be a little bit more agitated. What do you think of the idea of just being a jerk to everybody else and just try to be super nice to the people near you? Because, like, I don't think that actually would work very well, because I haven't tried it. It's just an idea that I had. I'm like, this could work, but sometimes I just feel like I'm not nice enough to the people closest to me. And that obviously will totally be important to this whole idea of being happy and peaceful, because if the people around me are happy, I'm happy. But if I'm not happy, it's a whole mess. What do you think?
I don't think it works, because society really doesn't let you be an asshole without repercussions. People might become agitated with you very easily. And these people, if you're not doing it with the people closest to you, it means you're doing it with either strangers on the street or people at work, or, you know, just, you know, semi-acquaintances kind of thing. And these are the people that are more likely to not understand you and lash out at you because you're being maybe not so nice. The problem with that is then if it's at work, you have to deal with it. If it's a stranger, maybe it ends the situation, but it could become physical, which is a problem. And then with the acquaintances, those acquaintances might have become good friends and now they won't, because you maybe weren't as nice to them as you would have been. But whereas when you're not nice to the people who know you well, they're more able to understand why you're not being nice, why you're angry, and probably more able to deal with it and, you know, move past it. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it definitely does. I mean, I think there's a reason why I haven't implemented it in real life, because, yeah, you're right. It's, you know, lashing out at people on the subway, probably a bad idea. Somebody's going to take a swing at me at some point. All right, I've got a punchable face. So when it comes to that kind of thing, I don't exactly – every now and then, though, I will say something. I'm like, I'm getting off the train here, when the people just decide to run in. That's as much as I will be a little rude outside, because it's just like, I am not staying on this train. I have things to do. So I might have to say something about it. But yeah, there is the chance that people will forgive you or understand you better if and when that happens. I mean, I've been trying to keep my temper under control, but man, it doesn't work. Like, it comes out. It's almost like – it's almost involuntary at times, where, like, I've said it out loud and I'm like, oh, man, if I just kept that in my head, everything would have been fine. But you just had to do it. So you have better impulse control then. That must be it. How could somebody get better at impulse control? Any ideas?
I think that's very difficult. I think impulse control is something – I think it's an inherent part of your personality, and I think it's very hard to change it. I've maybe not always had as good impulse control as I have now, but I've always been able to reel it in when I lose my temper pretty quickly. But, you know, by definition, temper, when you lose it, it's gone and you lash out. And it's happened with me. And it's usually definitely, as we were saying, the people that are closest to you that get the brunt of it. You know, and I don't like it when I lose my temper, but I actually think sometimes it needs to happen. It's, you know, it's your, you know, mind and personality's way of, you know, getting out what's really pissing you off and, you know, letting the, you know, person who's pissing you off know that, you know, maybe they've gone too far and, you know, maybe they don't want to do that again in the future.
You're not easily offended, right?
No, I mean, it takes a lot to
Yeah, it takes a really long time to get you angry. I remember when we were in college, and I think your sister wrecked the car that you had fixed. I think it was a 442. Yes. And yes. You were just – I was more angry than you were, which was very yes. odd. How were you not angry about that? So the backstory is Rob fixed up – correct me if I'm wrong. You fixed up an Oldsmobile 442. It was like mm-hmm. freaking awesome when you were done with it. Mm-hmm. It was beautiful. I believe it was a red convertible, am I right?
Yeah, red – when with the black interior and a black convertible top, yeah.
And your sister backed it into something and like kind of wrecked the car. Is that right?
Yeah.
And you were like super chill. You're like, okay, she's okay? She's fine. And then like you were okay about this. Even though you spent all this time on this car, does this even stand out in your head? It does stand out in mine because I was just shocked that I was more upset than you were. How did that even work in your head?
The biggest thing is I was concerned for my sister. That's why the first question when anybody is ever in an accident in my car or anything like that, are they okay? A car can be replaced. And this was, I actually think this comes from my father. I was in accidents when I first, you know, got my license, and he would never get upset at me. He understood, you know, it was an accident, whether it was my fault, someone else's fault. His first question was always, are you okay? And then when I said yes, his thing would be like, so it doesn't matter. Whatever happened to the car, we can fix, or we can get you a new car. It's just a thing. So the biggest thing is, you know, the priorities in life. Obviously, health, you know, happiness are much more important than a thing, which is a car. You know, was I upset? Yeah, I was upset. But in the big scheme of things, to me, that wasn't that important. You know, I could fix another car. That was the part I liked anyway, was the fixing part, getting to the nice part. You know, so I kind of glass half full kind of thing. I found the bright side of it. I knew that, you know, either I would be fixing that car or, you know, I would be getting rid of that and getting something else that I could work on, which is, once again, going back to how I deal with stress and get over it. So it's kind of, you know, looking for the bright side is the big thing I always try and do.
That is a really healthy way to put that. I know with my son, I'm basically trying to make sure that he doesn't deal with what I dealt with. And just basically, yeah, when these accidents happen, same thing. I'm like, one, are you okay? And two, it's like, do you understand why I was telling you originally not to do that? He's like, mm-hmm. Oh, I see, because I got hurt. It's like, yes, that's why I tell you this. He's like, oh, okay. Because I try to explain to him why I'm not just like, I try so hard to not just say because I told you or because I'm your dad. Like, I don't want to mm-hmm. use these as reasoning. It has happened on occasion because he's asking like 1,000 questions. And then I'm just, you know, when you're fried, you're fried. Sometimes it happens. But
right.
I want to that's the giant reason why I wanted to be a better person and have some kind of calmness, because the thing is, I have a son and I want to make sure that he is raised right. I want to make sure that he can handle what's going to happen to him, because if he's going to be like me, because he is me, I have to know how to fix this thing before I can tell him what to, like, okay, by the way, you're going to feel this. You're going to have this kind of emotion. It's going to be incredibly strong. Here's how this is going to work out. Or here's the best method I have found in my years of dealing with this. Because he's going to be raw, right? I mean, there's going to be a whole lot of stuff that's going to happen to him. I look at him sometimes and I'm like, man, somebody's going to break this kid's heart. And somebody's going to make – he's going to have really bad days at times. And he's always smiling. He's always laughing. He's a good – I mean, he's a really good kid. And I've seen some really crappy kids out there when we go out to parks and things. He's a very well-behaved boy. And so I'm just mm-hmm. like, okay, I need to make sure that I can figure me out so he's got insight into this, because otherwise – I don't have any. It's like, I can't ask my mom is not really great at handling her own temper. So I can't really go, hey mom, how do you do this? My dad's no longer with us. So he was always really calm, and you met him. He was a pretty chill guy.
Yeah.
It took a lot to piss him off. Like he would not yell. He would basically get yelled at for like, I'd say about an hour between my parents fighting before he would get angry, or at least he'd verbalize it. he would normally just stay at a really even tone. So I obviously did not inherit his temperament. And so this idea of like, how do you get there for this kid, for the kid? Like, I want to make sure that my boy knows, okay, this is what a good relationship looks like. There's no yelling involved in a relationship. There's no like fighting. There's a unified front of parents, even though my wife and I are, well, ex-wife now, we're not together. So like this kind of thing is still there. What? I don't even know. I just got lost talking there. The idea was that I'm trying to just figure out how to be calm for the boy. That's a big kicker. Like, okay, I don't have any more time to just go, hey, I can just be an idiot. I can just deal with this and one day nothing will happen. It's like, no, every freaking time I have this kid around, I need to make sure that I'm up to speed. Because that freaking changes you. You're like, okay, I got to deal with this all the time. It's not like this job ever ends, by the way. The parent's job doesn't end. This isn't like you get to go, okay, well, even though he doesn't live with me, it's like I'm still his dad, so I always have to deal with that. So yeah, that's how you didn't get angry at your sister about that. Although I got very angry about it because I think part of this is about possessions, right? There was a time where I was lusting after this chair. You know the chair. I own it. It's over there. It's my Eames chair. I waited 10 years to buy this chair, right? So what happens when anything ever happens to it? I lose my freaking mind. It's just a thing. Which is part of why I wanted to like just maybe I should just own nothing. This is another like I'm really as you know, I'm really bad at moderating, right? Either I can have nothing or I can have all of it. So I'm like, what if I just didn't own anything? What if I just didn't have anything? So I tried to be a minimalist in some respects. Like I tried not to have you know this about me, but the like how many extra cables I would always have. Like I would probably have like thousands of USB cables, thousands of RCA cables, everything you would never like. Why do I have I think I still have telephone cable, which I don't really need. But so conceptually, I'm trying to own less. Do you find yourself ever like so? You really don't have possessions where you do that because if your car was like that. So you don't. So you're not a minimalist, I would assume.
Not a minimalist, but I do not like clutter. I need organization. I don't know. It's just, you know, part of my personality. So if I find things are getting cluttered, I will get rid of things, be it, you know, sell them on eBay, throw them away if they're not, you know, useful to anybody. You know, I don't keep a lot of old clothing that I don't wear. If it's something I don't wear, I either give it away or throw it away if it's not something that's, you know, nice enough to give to Goodwill or something like that. So it's not a minimalist. If I need something, I buy it, you know. I allow myself, you know, to buy things that, you know, like make me happy. If I need, you know, a new treadmill because I like to run, you know, I'll buy a new treadmill. If I, you know, need a part for the car, I'll definitely buy it. But I don't like to have superfluous stuff that I'm not going to use. That's the biggest thing. Everything, you know, I have in my house is something that I use, you know, as far as things in the kitchen. If it's, I don't have a lot of, you know, small appliances that I don't use, you know, because, you know, that one time I really wanted an ice cream maker. It just annoys me because it clutters up the house. So, you know, in some respects, yes, you know, I keep things to a minimum, but I do allow myself to have things that I do want.
So, yeah. Okay. So I could just shoot the breeze with you all day. It's just like, oh yeah, we've got lots of stories, man. We've got lots of stories of stuff that we've done. But we've been talking for about an hour. So for our show, I should say goodbye for the show. Do you have anything you'd like to say before we say goodbye to the audience?
Just if you're trying to be Zen and looking for peace, you know, self-introspection is the most important thing. Just look inside yourself and try and figure yourself out. And, you know, that's easier said than done. But, you know, a little self-awareness allows you to figure out what's going wrong. And don't be afraid to change things and try new things, you know, in order to make yourself happier, calmer, whatever you're looking for. You know, just the biggest thing is, you know, no fear. If it doesn't work, you can always change back to something else or do something else. So the biggest thing is, you know, don't be afraid and go for it.
Yeah. And one of the things I've also found is that, you know, you can look into these things. You can read about it all the time. You can listen to books and everything. If you don't actually practice it, it just doesn't work. It's like, just like exercises, getting your brain to change and make these new connections requires actual work. And it's going to feel weird, by the way. So if you're like struggling like me, just don't be afraid. It's gonna. If you are failing at things, that's gonna be normal. it's going to be completely normal to not be, you're not going to be zen tomorrow. You're not going to be super calm. You might just figure out like what I figured out, like, okay, yeah, you know what? I can be irritated at times and I need that because I need to let that out and then move on. Otherwise, it builds and it just will undercut everything else. So if you're failing, you're doing an okay job. Don't worry about it, everybody. So yeah, this was Quest for Peace. I'm Aya Zaktar. That was Robert Borghese, the man who's known me for 17 years on purpose, I will add. So thanks for being on. And I guess we'll see everybody sometime because I don't do the show very regularly. Sorry.